hemp seed is fairly high in protein. It's almost 26% crude protein. You know, comparing that to like wheat mids or soy hulls, which are, you know, between 8 or 12 and 18. So it does have fairly high protein in it. It's also very high in fiber. Now, the interesting thing about that is the fiber is fairly indigestible.
That's Dr. Joe Bender from the University of Pennsylvania's School of Veterinary Medicine. This is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. I am your host, Eric Herlock. And on today's show, we'll hear all about Dr. Bender's analysis on hemp as a feed and what it might mean for livestock farmers and what it might mean for hemp farmers. But first, let's have a little news from the world of hemp. Okay, so on Monday, there was a story in the Associated Press written by Bruce Schreiner. The headline reads, McConnell willing to offer hemp bill to resolve glitches. And then here I'll read the first few paragraphs. As hemp enters a new era as a legal agricultural commodity, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Monday he's willing to offer follow-up legislation to resolve any quote-unquote glitches stemming from mistaken identity between the crop and its look-alike illicit cousin. That includes safeguarding hemp shipments stopped by police who can't tell whether they intercept a legal crop or if it's marijuana. And he quotes, some glitches remain to be worked out and some of it may require legislation, McConnell told reporters after a hemp forum in Louisville, his hometown. Using a football analogy, the Republican senator said hemp supporters have reached the red zone in restoring the historic crop to mainstream American agriculture. And he added, I'm prepared to do my job all the way into the end zone if it requires additional legislation. All right, so there you go. Mitch McConnell wants your hemp shipments to arrive safely. Yesterday, I had a brief conversation with Taylor Groff up there in York at Groff North America, where they're building Pennsylvania's first hemp train processing center. I was curious about how many acres they've been able to contract with farmers.
We are at about 1,200 acres contracted that are actually signed right now, and we've got commitments that put us well over 1,500. So we anticipate by the end of this week to have our original goal allotted and signed for.
And I was curious about where those farmers are getting the seed.
So we are going to be selling the seed that they'll utilize in the contract arrangement.
And then so where is Groff North America getting the seed?
We're sourcing the seed from Hemp Genetics in Canada. We thought it was really important this year to use a dual-purpose crop, one that's certified and has great germination rates.
And I was curious if they had talked to anybody who had grown that variety last year here in Pennsylvania.
There was a few individuals that we did talk to, most of which was on a very small scale. I know the Penn State did a few trials with some of their varieties, some of which that we won't be utilizing, but you know, last year was definitely a poor year to judge much of anything in the hemp space.
Yeah, if you remember, we had a little bit of rain here in Pennsylvania last year. So I want to periodically check in with hemp farmers this season. So today I called up Tom Colton. He's a hemp farmer out there in West Hempfield Township. Wanted to see what he was up to. So Tom, what are you up to?
Well, putting plants in the ground, and just had a mechanical breakdown. The new planter was actually too heavy for the tractor I was using, and I busted a lift arm, so.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, it's no big deal. It gives me an excuse to go down to Weaver's.
So what are you planting?
We're planting hemp right now. Not all of it, just some early experiments to see how early we can get in with certain plants, and if it does get too cold, I have the ability to take my tunnel layer over it, and I can just put a plastic hoop over it with some wire hoops that you lay, and that'll keep it like a mini greenhouse in there. So.
Okay. When did you start those seeds?
About a month ago, I'd say.
Okay. And how many plants are we talking about?
750.
All right. So as a hemp farmer, what else is on your mind these days?
Well, I'd like to expound a little bit on interactions I've been having with nameless Oregon seed companies and their professionalism.
Uh-oh, what's all this about?
You know, I understand that some of these fellows, this is their first foray into a legal side of this business, but it doesn't excuse certain people for it. It doesn't excuse them for making ill-informed claims of material that they could provide to people that, I'm not saying speaking for myself, but I've seen it over and over. Guys getting screwed out of seed that you know, they were given loose promises or, yeah, we'll have plenty, man. You know, just check back. We're having a release date. And then they check back and then, you know, something goes wrong with their server. Or we were hacked or something like that. It's just bullshit because they're just lying and making up for, you know, what would not be acceptable in any other realm of agriculture. But this seems to be becoming par for the course, at least this year, at least in two different occasions. I know people that have been screwed out of seed lots that they were promised and or left scrambling for plants or whatever they can get because they've banked upon this. And yeah, maybe they didn't do their due diligence of having a plan B, C, and D. But for these people that are new to the even farming, and then they go into this and they hit a snag right off the nose, it's a little disconcerning for just as an outsider to view that.
So what's your advice for farmers who are listening to this?
Well, if you're buying seed and you haven't personally met the people, I would be very cautious.
Wise words from Tom Colton. He's a hemp grower out there in West Hempfield Township. Okay, so just a reminder for those folks here in Pennsylvania who are looking for a good information session on hemp farming. Steve Groff and Andre Fry are hosting another one of their meetings this Friday, April 12th. From 6 to 8 p.m. at the Hoffman Building on Park Avenue in Quarryville, PA, 17566. You can give Steve Groff a call to register, 717-575-6778. Tell him you heard about it on the podcast. I went to their meeting last week, and it was great. Lots of good information about planting and growing and soil health, all that stuff. So be sure to check that out. Okay, before we get into the interview today with Joe Bender from Penn Vet, I wanted us to listen to a little bit more of my interview with Bill Roberts. Remember him from a few episodes ago? He's a beef farmer in Perry County. He's also on the Hemp Steering Committee here in Pennsylvania that's working with our Department of Ag to make sure our fledgling hemp industry gets off the ground safely. So Bill had mentioned that Penn Vet was doing some analysis on the hemp seed cake for a livestock feed. And all right, here's Bill.
What we were interested in primarily from ours was the cake from our processing. When you process a seed, an oil seed, you get two things. You get oil and you get what's called cake. Mm-hmm. And the cake of hemp is very, very high in protein. Ours was measuring in the 24% protein.
Wow.
And if you think about corn, which is 3%, protein per 100, you know, I mean, it is very high.
Right.
So we have used that in the first year, the cake that we've got to grow, to use on some of our heifers, in a test against a kind of conventional 16% seed. And it worked very well.
And what kind of results did you see in the heifers?
It was very good. We fed, one group of heifers out of a regular 16% grow feed for cattle and free choice hay. And we fed the others just our hemp cake and free choice. And for the first about 6 or 8 weeks of the test, the heifer groups did about the same. And then at about 10 weeks, the heifers on hemp began to gain more than the substantially more actually than the regular grain.
Wow.
Supplement.
Right.
So we're excited about that.
Yeah, right.
And we thought that was going to happen, and I don't want to. I mean, we are in the process this year of doing a test this time. With University of Pennsylvania's Bolton Center, which is their veterinary school.
Sure, New Bolton.
To do more tests on the hemp cake as a feed. And we're excited about working with them. And
is there a way you can sort of quantify how many, you know, acres you would need to feed a certain amount of cattle?
We cannot yet. And one of the things that we are looking for from New Bolton is for them to tell us what kind of a configuration really we need with this hemp. So how much should we be feeding? I don't think you could just feed straight hemp. I think there's going to be some other things in it. Okay. And so one of the issues for it, we know it's a good food. The question is how much do you have to feed, and is it economical to do that? And if it's not economical, how do we get it that way? I mean, again, like a lot of things in hemp, this is the very beginning of a long, I mean, we have 2 years out before we're going to be satisfied that we have some kind of real product here. I mean, we think we do, but we need to do a lot more testing on everything from the economics of it to, you know, how it should be fed.
From a marketing standpoint, I could see that, you know, you got your grass-fed beef now, but then you could have another niche for hemp-fed beef, right?
You are singing from the same hymnal we are. I mean, we hope to make this an opportunity for ourselves and for others to have a very special beef. Okay. That's one of the things that we are hoping for at the end of this.
All right. So that's Bill Roberts, beef farmer, hemp farmer. So that got me curious. I wanted to talk to somebody at PennVet and see what the analysis was. And the result of my curiosity is the following interview. Dr. Joseph Bender, welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. Could you introduce yourself for us?
Sure, Eric. Thanks for having me. My name is Joe Bender. I'm a veterinarian with the University of Pennsylvania Veterinary School, located down at New Bolton Center in Kennett Square.
And so you're on our show today because you've been doing some research with, hemp seed as a livestock feed?
That's correct. Yeah, we've looked at a few analyses of hemp seed, which comes in a cake form. So it's actually the seed after the oil has been pressed out of it, and the mm-hmm. remaining seed is what has the possibility of being utilized as livestock feed.
Right. And so can you describe the research you were doing?
Yeah, sure. What we did was we had the samples and we got the analysis back. So we did a couple different things. One, we have several computer models where we entered the analysis in. And then we were seeing how that could potentially fit into specifically dairy cattle rations.
Okay.
So that's looking at the nutrient composition of the feed. And then also we start to look at some economics. You know, what do we have to raise the hemp seed for? What's the cost of raising it? Then that determines whether it fits into the model or not.
Right. So what, you're looking at the nutritional profile?
Yeah, correct. And there's, you know, kind of a couple things that stood out. I mean, one, hemp seed is fairly high in protein. It's almost 26% crude protein.
Well,
you know, comparing that to like wheat mids or soy hulls, which are, you know, between 8 or 12 and 18. So it does have fairly high protein in it. It's also very high in fiber. Now, the interesting thing about that is the fiber is fairly indigestible in a cow. So we look at what goes, you know, what we use a metric of how much is digested in the first 24 hours. And a lot of our other feeds are between like 50 and 70%. Corn grain, corn distillers, wheat mid, soy hull, soybean meal will be between 50 and 70% gone in the first 24 hours. Hemp seed is only 7%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of fiber there. So it can be very filling. But the downside of it is just not very digestible. So it could be a filler feed, but as far as the animal really being able to pull a lot of nutrients out of it, that would be a downside of the feed.
Right, that seems like a major strike.
Yeah, you're exactly right, because we're always looking for opportunity to put rapidly digestible nutrients into a cow.
Yeah.
So, and then the protein component of it, about 5% of it is of that, you know, 26% is slowly degraded protein. So it actually bypasses the rumen and gets back to the small intestine. There's actually a fair amount of value there. We're always looking for feeds that are bypass protein. That's one of our biggest costs on dairy farms.
Yeah.
It would be that bypass protein. So there, like I said, there's a couple of competitive aspects of it. And the last thing to look at would be the fat percent. It's about 13% fat, crude fat. So that can be a good thing sometimes, and it can be challenging. We'd really have to break out that fat a little bit more and see exactly where it's digested in the cow and exactly what type of fats we're looking at. Some can be good, some can be very bad. We're not quite to that stage yet.
Right. And that's like what, the omega-3s and 6s?
Yep, 6s. And actually, we're looking at more of the volatile fatty acids that it makes out. So linoleic, oleic, different types of fats that way. So yes, those are a component of that. The last thing, so yeah, there's some real positives. The protein's good, the fat is good. The one from a minerals perspective, there's two things to note. One, the calcium level is fairly high. This could be a good thing for poultry moving forward, as we're looking for ways to get calcium into the birds for shell integrity.
Right.
The magnesium and potassium are both fairly high. The one downside is the phosphorus was high also, and that's obviously something we're trying to limit when we do diets, because we're trying to avoid excess phosphorus going into the cow or swine or poultry, because that gets excreted in the urine or feces.
Okay.
And we're trying to keep that out of the bay. So from a conservation standpoint.
Got it.
So you just be limited a little bit on how much you could feed.
Were you looking at like milk production too?
Yeah, we did. So we run some models looking at, you know, what's an average Holstein cow, you know, with a 3.8% butterfat and a 3.0 protein making 90 pounds. And then we run some different scenarios. Can hemp be a part of that diet, you know, to generate 90 pounds of milk, and at what cost? And it really can be. At, you know, if we're able to raise the hemp seed for $100 a ton, you know, we'll talk at it per ton. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it would take up to 5 pounds of it. And that's kind of a gold number we use, 5 pounds a day. And yeah, we're able to include it at that amount, and it would support 90 pounds of milk. When you get above about $170 per ton, then it doesn't become as cost effective to feed the hemp to generate that 90 pounds of milk.
Right.
So really the models comparing the hemp seed cake to wheat mids and soy hulls, some other very common byproduct feeds that we use in dairy cow diets, those prices almost mirrored each other.
Hmm.
So it's using an offset. Hemp has higher protein, but a little bit lower digestibility. Wheat mids and soy hulls have lower protein, but the fiber in those two feeds is very digestible.
Okay.
So it really comes down to price. So yes, it can be part of a diet, and it can support a fair amount of milk production at a dairy cow. So there's possibility there.
And do you think the crop itself would produce the yields needed to make it economically viable?
Yeah, that's the big question. The little bit of interaction we've had so far doesn't sound like, you know, the seeds we used in this study were actually raised organically. So there was some weed pressure for sure that really limited yield.
Right.
So it really wasn't competitive at all in that type of scenario. So right. When we talk about things pricing in, we're really looking at the cost of seed, you know, fertilizer, chemicals, land rent, equipment to harvest. So all that would be priced into, you know, if a farmer wanted to raise it on his own and feed it to his cows.
Right.
And we evaluate every feed stuff like that on farms, you know, soybeans, corn grain, et cetera. So my knowledge of the products so far is I don't know that we're going to, at least the organic method that was used in the product that we looked at, no, it would not be competitive.
Okay.
The price would be too high to even be a viable option. So it's really like any other commodity we look at, you know, the higher the yield goes, that dilutes down the cost of the feed and makes it more competitive to be priced.
Now you're just looking at seed. Is there any reason to think that, you know, you could chop the biomass for silage and cows could eat that, or is that crazy?
There's going to be more. I don't think it's crazy.
Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, right. not off the wall. It really comes down to, you know, there'd have to be some work done on looking at, like, what's the proper maturity. Because
mm-hmm.
we know the seed, you know, is fairly indigestible. What's the stalk going to be look like?
Sure.
So, yeah, there'd probably be some different varieties to look at and make some decisions that way, really similar to all our other crops. But if the seed, if the primary goal was to get the seed to press the oil out of it, then the plant has to mature.
Right.
And then the longer the maturity goes, the more the digestibility decreases.
Right. The woodier the stem, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. It just puts down more lignin and becomes less digestible and becomes more of a filler feed.
Can you talk about any of the legal challenges or what needs to happen sort of in the U.S. before hemp seed can even be a legal livestock feed?
Yeah, sure. So probably the big thing that we need to keep in the back of our mind is that the Food and Drug Administration and the American Feed Control Official Group, the American Feed Control Officials is a basically a panel. There's representatives from all 50 states. And they look at feeds and determine if they're safe to include in the feed supply.
Mm-hmm.
The big bottleneck for hemp is going to be that the Food and Drug Administration considers it a drug.
Right.
It's not a feed. So for feeds, we have a class that's GRAS, generally recognized as safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not that hard to actually get approved. But from the FDA standpoint, it's going to be really, really difficult because they consider it a drug. And there's been some work out of Europe that shows, you know, hemp is different than marijuana, hemp really having a low THC content in it. They have looked at some, you know, when an animal consumes hemp, do they deposit it into milk or into fat or into egg? And they do. It's trace minute amounts, but it's still there.
Right.
So then it becomes very difficult to regulate. From that standpoint. So that's the challenge hemp's going to have moving forward, is that the FDA views it as a drug. And the approval process is really, really stringent.
Do you have other hemp-related research projects on the horizon?
Not at this point. We actually don't have anything looking forward, moving forward. There is some interest generated some from folks outside the university that have come to us and say, hey, we're thinking about doing this. You know, we have to get some approval, you know, getting approval to actually grow the seed, to actually grow it on our farm. You know, once they get approval, then it'd be interesting to look at some of these other aspects of the product, you know, whether it be the seed or like you were saying before, the forage possibilities from hemp.
Right.
So it would be something possibly to look at.
What kinds of questions about hemp do you get from people outside the university?
A lot of folks are interested, you know, can this be something that we can infuse into, you know, we do most of our work with dairy farmers. Is this something we can put into the dairy industry to prop up farms, to provide, you know, jobs for people? I'm not sure, just because of the difficulties and legalities of the hemp and feeding it to dairy cows.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big one. I think a lot of people take the wait and see approach.
Right.
Kind of the saying in dairy is, you know, you don't want to be the first person, but you don't want to be the last. And we don't have a lot of first people jumping into it quite yet.
Right.
You know, some of the risks, and we're just not quite sure how it's going to play out. So yeah, it's just, kind of in its infancy.
Sure.
But I think there's a lot of, the buzz has been, can we, you know, grow the crop and, you know, provide some economic benefit through the processing of the hemp seed.
Yeah, I've talked to, you know, dairy farmers out here, you know, in Lancaster County. And, you know, there's a lot of excitement because, you know, they think these struggling dairy farms might be able to pivot into growing hemp either for CBD or for, you know, fiber. But like you said, it's just in the infancy. And it's a wait and see kind of thing.
Right, yeah. And it kind of, I mean, maybe the way I think about it is thinking about kind of some of our plain sect and the Amish growing it as tobacco. We do a lot of cash flow analysis and looking at farms and trying to figure out how to get them into a positive cash flow. And like tobacco is a really good example. It really helps the cash flow because you have an income other than milk.
Right.
However, the land base needed to grow it a lot of times hinders some of these farmers because then they're forced to buy other crops to feed their cows.
Right.
So it's really, there's a dynamic there. It can be very valuable, but at the same time, some people may have to make a decision. You know, if we plant the hemp and the yield is low, you know, how much land is it going to take, draw away from my dairy enterprise?
Right.
it could ultimately end up hurting them.
Sure.
Some folks that have lots of land and can diversify and try it, it could be a possibility. But for your average farmer who's really locked land base wise, it'll be difficult, I think, to integrate.
Right. Do you have any advice to either farmers or, you know, ranchers, people raising livestock, when it comes to hemp?
That's a good question. You'd want to step back and take a look at, I think about it just like any of our other feeds. What's the land mass you have available, and what animals on your farm or ranch are you trying to feed? And really evaluate that number of acres and then number of tons of feed I need to grow to feed my animals. Because most of our farms, the animals are the primary source of revenue. If we start doing something different, cropping strategy, et cetera, that's going to hurt the revenue from, you know, beef sales or milk sales, et cetera, even though we may get some income from the hemp, it may actually, you know, when you look at your year-end cash flow, actually be harmful to the farm. So before you dive into it, and a lot of people just don't even do that with just the regular ranching or beef or dairy enterprise. Getting your forages and your animals in balance, knowing exactly what you need before you dive into a new endeavor, before you even try it, would be my best advice. And it seems simple, but gosh, we see it all the time. Just we don't have things sized right for the operation that we're trying to do.
All right. Is there anything else you want to tell our audience about your research with hemp seed?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, they're doing some work down at North Carolina looking at it in poultry. That'll be interesting. I think the calcium content will be interesting to see, and the magnesium, the potassium, if that could fit into a poultry diet. The one thing we didn't talk about was the amino acid profile. That's very important for, you know, swine and poultry. Okay. They don't have ruminants. They don't make their own amino acids. You know, in the samples we looked at, they haven't been that impressive.
Oh, okay.
The amino acid content. Yes, there's a lot of protein there, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's driving the right amino acids. So some more work on that. Amino acid work is expensive, and it's extremely time-consuming. So I think we'll probably get there. But yeah, you know, they did some work, and yeah, you can feed poultry a fair amount of hemp, and they grew. However, you know, the feed conversion rate wasn't, didn't as improve as much as they wanted to.
Okay.
They ate a lot of the hemp, and they grew, but they converted it somewhat poorly.
Right.
And I think that'll get better, you know, as we, you know, change the hybrids. We get different varieties of it.
Right. In poultry feed, are they feeding the hemp cake, or are they feeding the straight seeds?
Correct. That is the hemp cake.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what they were looking at. So the oil was removed. So over in Europe, they did a couple studies looking at that. When they fed the seed or just straight hemp, it actually, they have what they call a daily allowable THC level in humans.
Okay.
And when they fed the seed or the straight hemp plant, it actually exceeded that amount.
Oh.
When they used the hemp cake that had the oil removed, then, you know, it was minuscule amount.
Okay.
So, and it actually had to be about 1,000 times higher than what they were finding to actually cause any type of symptoms in humans.
Right.
So yes, the cake with the oil removed, very safe. The thing they get into with the seeds is contamination from the leaves, which actually, you know, has a lot of THC in it. Varieties of looking at. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. So yeah, the hemp seed cake was fine. Whole hemp can really be a challenge. So that'd be something we'd look at too.
Sure.
When we start using whole plants.
How about in the amino acid area? Would those levels be better in the whole plant?
You know, I can't answer that. We haven't looked at the whole plant.
Okay.
And generally our forages have lower amino acid concentrations than say the grain.
Okay.
So, you know, soybean meal, that's why it's very popular in swine and poultry. It has very high levels of lysine. Very common, common amino acid, usually thought as being our first limiting amino acid. In hemp, the level is very low.
Okay.
and the histidine and methionine would be the kind of the other big players, and they were also pretty low. So it may be able to complement. You know, you're always looking for a portfolio of feeds to feed animals, and it may fit into that.
And it might work well with a rotation.
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right. Yep.
So you were studying mostly dairy. Is there anything we should know about feeding to beef cattle?
Yeah, we did look at mostly dairy because we usually have a higher or more complicated portfolio of feeds. But for beef cattle, a lot of it's really the same same components. So we look at energy when we're putting energy into beef cows for average daily gain. So from like a carbohydrate standpoint, sugar, starch, the sugar and starch in hemp are both fairly low compared to corn grain or corn distillers grain. The difference would be the fat. The fat in the hemp was higher. But yeah, starch, especially starch, you know, when you think of finishing beef cattle in the feed yard, is really what we point to. The one limitation for the beef cows is going to be the digestibility component of it. I mean, they're going to be limited on what they can eat. If it's not very digestible, they can only eat so much. It's going to take a while for them to be able to actually digest it and pull the nutrients. So if you had to pick, you know, if I had to pick between, you know, just a straight, you know, grass that we typically think of beef cows being are, or grazing through hemp using, you know, what we've seen here, there could be some real limitations using the hemp for daily gain.
That's Dr. Joe Bender from Penn Vet's New Bolton Center discussing the pros and cons of using hemp seed as a livestock feed. Well, that about does it for us today. Hope you enjoyed the show. Oh, before we go, let's check in with my editor, Steve Sieber, and see what's cooking for Lancaster Farming Newspaper for this Saturday's edition. Here, let's call him.
Hello, Steve Sieber, Lancaster Farming.
Hey, Steve, I'm just wrapping up this episode of the podcast, and I thought I'd call and check in and see what stories you're working on for the paper this week.
Yeah, well, tomorrow is an exciting day. The Census of Agriculture full report comes out, so our news editor, Phil, will be writing about that, and he's also covering a PA hearing on milk hauling. And we've got an intercropping and organics article. Dick Wanner went out to a live staking field day, and one of our correspondents did a nice feature on a father-son tractor collection. So it's been a busy week.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like you have a good crop of stories for us, so looking forward to reading those in the paper this weekend. All right, anything else?
No, I'm enjoying the podcast. Keep it up.
All right, that makes two of us. Thanks. See ya.
Thanks. Have a good one.
All right, that was Steve Sieber, the editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper. Speaking of Lancaster Farming Newspaper, if you're not a subscriber, now's your chance. We have a good deal for you at lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal. It's literally the best farming newspaper in the country. Sorry, everybody else, but it's the truth. You can see what we're all about at lancasterfarming.com. Okay, so if you have questions or comments about anything you heard today on the show, or if you have any hemp-related news tips that you'd like to share with me, I am always open to receiving your emails. So podcast@lancasterfarming.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Today's show is copyright 2019 Lancaster Farming, which is part of the Steinman Communications family. Shout out to Bob down there in Lancaster. Okay, today's show was written, recorded, edited, and produced by Eric Herlock. Any music you may have heard on today's show is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow. All right, until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper.